God has really blessed me. You know, he let me work in D.C., let me work with EIB in Hollywood, in Silicon Valley. And he's shown me through all those experiences that there is one problem and one solution, and that's why we do this show.
Welcome to A Disciple's View with Todd Herman.
When the God of the universe created the world, he didn't snap his fingers or wink his eye. The Lord spoke. He said, let there be light. Because we believe, we speak about the happenings in this world, mindful that our true home is with Jesus Christ and his kingdom. I'm Todd Herman. Welcome to A Disciple's View. Just to touch on some of the breaking news, it's shocking to learn that some of the nominees of President Trump are being accused of sexual impropriety. It's shocking. I'm stunned. See, the problem here with the Mockingbird media is that when they participated in the attack on Brett Kavanaugh, claiming that he was part of a vicious rape gang, where there was not just no evidence, there was the very opposite, the evidence of malice and of foreplanning and foresight. What do I mean? Well, the accuser going through and erasing her social media presence, or someone doing that for her, probably a company that specializes in that, that can be done. Cleansing digital footprints, removal of any speeches she'd ever given. That's all done in advance. It's advanced planning. It's prepping the environment. That's what this is about. We expect these things. And here's the real problem, I think, that women who have been raped are not going to be believed. Because they've abused this, not the women, but the people who sought to assassinate the character of Brett Kavanaugh. They did this to these women. Pete Hegseth has had now charges years old. Apparently there was a cash settlement to a woman who said that he blocked her in a hotel room and wouldn't let her leave and took her phone and that he sexually assaulted her. And Hegseth has said, no, it was consensual. And there was this payoff. Sounds very familiar. Was she raped? Man, I hope not. If she was, then I don't want Pete Hegseth to be Secretary of Defense. I don't want a rapist running the Secretary of Defense's office. That's just me. But we're not going to know. Now it's Matt Gaetz. Now, Gaetz' case is far more clear. The man who accused Gaetz is apparently himself guilty of sex with a minor. And was apparently also guilty of doing this to other people. The same exact claim. I wish the Mockingbird media would understand the harm they've done, not just to themselves, but to women who've been raped. The Me Too movement's gone. It was replaced with, you must pretend men are women. The Me Too movement was replaced with, hey, if there's a man watching you shower and you're a woman and you don't watch him, don't want him to watch you shower, you're a bigot. You're violent. That's what's replaced Me Too. I so wish. Maybe I should just pray that God would peel the scales from their eyes. God provided us these common blessings. That's a beautiful phrase. Common blessing. God looked at what he'd created, his creation, and knew we would need air and water and food. And in the Garden of Eden, we had all that in abundance. We were to work, but we didn't have sickness. Childbirth was not then at that point going to be a chore. It became one after the fall. We weren't going to be having to struggle to feed ourselves. There weren't thorns and thistles and the things that we deal with now. And it wasn't to be that way, but we broke that. God had one single rule. He provided us liberty, not freedom. Freedom is to do what you with without restraint. God gave us liberty. You can do everything except that. But we had to do that, didn't we? But even as God removed us from the garden, sent us packing, just on the way out of the Garden of Eden, at that point in the person of Adam and Eve, God said, wait. Oh, my children, come back. I'm going to clothe you. I'm going to give you animal skins to wear. I don't want you to be cold. Cold? What's that, Father? You're about to find out. You're about to find out. But he didn't withdraw the common blessings. They became harder to achieve, not the air, but sometimes the water, often the food. What's it like to observe people in power saying, hey, let's make the common blessings of God harder to get? Let's allow big companies to seize farms. Let's destroy family farms by obvious government force, forcing farmers in the Netherlands to stop farming. Hey, if you won't kill all this cattle and all these pigs and destroy the bodies, not sell them, not let people eat them, if you won't do that, we'll ban you from farming for life. And not just you, but your kids. Lifetime ban. Your family will never farm again in Europe. At the same time as factory farms, Monsanto, one of the most evil companies in the world, Monsanto. They really don't want us talking about them anymore. Notice that they don't run ads anymore. What's it like to know that there are people who do not want you to have access to something as simple as meat? Bill Gates does not want you to have access to something as simple as meat. He has said as much. In the developed nations, we used to use taxation and regulation to make meat harder and harder and harder to get so that you're forced to purchase his fake food. I mean, it's food the same way that, Fruit Loops is food. So this is happening across the board and across Europe and America. Not in Russia, not in China. It's happening here. The boss man of the UK, Keir Starmer, pretends to care about preventing famine.
To find solutions for the problems facing the world today. Climate change, poverty and hunger. And we made real progress. I was pleased to back President Lula's Global Alliance Against Hunger.
So when you hear that, he's against hunger. Good. Why is he trying to destroy family farming? Why were farmers in the UK told you need to destroy your gardens to make room for illegal immigrants? That's what they were told. See that food you're growing there? Those vegetables, those tubers, some of those staples. Destroy that. We're bringing in newcomers. They need to live there. Are they saying that to Monsanto? Are they saying that to Bill Gates's factory farms? No. He mentioned climate change. You know, carbon dioxide is killing the children, killing everybody, choking the world. Why is it that Bill Gates and Reid Hoffman from LinkedIn and Netflix and one of the guys who backed the lawfare against President Trump and Steve Jobs' widow and U2 from Bono, why are they putting in hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars, to hoard carbon dioxide? You know, that poison? They're doing it so they can pipe it into the greenhouses where they're going to grow the soy and the peas and the beans and the rice that they're going to make into fake meat and then use regulation and taxation to force you to eat that as supposed protein, though it's not a protein. It's a carbohydrate or a fat with some protein in it. They're also going to take that same carbon dioxide, which is a terrible poison. It's killing all the kids. And they're going to make it into turbo diesel, a new form of fuel. Pick your lane. Carbon dioxide is something you're willing to spend billions to sequester and hoard, or it's a poison. Pick it. Pick the lane. So that's the boss man of the UK, Keir Starmer. He's pretending to care about climate change and famine. Meanwhile, Jeremy Clarkson is an English television presenter, journalist, farmer, and here he is defending family farms.
And there's very, very little money in it. Very little money, as you know. And then we got the budget. Now, I know a lot of people all across the country in all walks of life took a bit of a kick on the shin with that budget. You lot got a knee in the nuts and a light hammer blow to the back of the head. Because we had pickup trucks, double cab pickup trucks, being reclassified as company cars. 211% tax rise there. £50 carbon tax on a bag of fertilizer. The basic farm payments altered in such a way that we're getting a lot less than we thought we were going to get. And then there was the inheritance tax business. Honestly, I don't know where to start. I know you've heard a lot about it today, and I'm not going to dwell on that. I will just say this. Rachel Reeves has told us, what is it, 72%. 72% of farms are going to be unaffected by this.
72% will be unaffected. The crowd disagreed. Everybody there raised their hand saying they'd be affected by it. Here's who's going to be affected by it. Family farms. There's a technique in big business that people like Gates and Buffett use. They want things to be more expensive. They want to squeeze the little guy. They want to be able to go to 300, 500, 1,200, 1,500, 2,000-acre ranches, 20,000-acre ranches and say, gosh, times are tough. Government's really squeezing you guys. What do you say to this much money to purchase your farm? Well, he continued to talk about this. And the British government has such hatred for farmers, they're attacking them for daring to defend their family farms from a predatory inheritance tax that will destroy family farms.
What is your message to this government?
Please back down, please.
And get the money from where?
Well, they've got 40 billion. I'll tell you where you go. Walk into any of the offices around here. If you don't understand what somebody's job is, fire them.
And how
the civil service.
They've got $40 billion, he says. And that conversation continues on with the reporter, pushing back on a man who doesn't need to be doing any of this. He's a very successful author and TV presenter. He doesn't need the money from his farm. He needs food. Have you ever been out with a farmer? Now, we're on 180 radio stations. Some of you are probably saying, hey, bud, I'm listening to you from my combine. If so, if you're listening to us while you're working at a farm, I love what you do. I wish I had the intelligence to do it. That's not the particular intelligence I have. But man, I've worked on farms. Back in the day, a friend of mine and I went out and we tossed alfalfa bales during the summer and during the springtime. Those were heavy. And I remember we slept in the bunkhouse. My dear departed friend Eric and I, and I'll tell you a story about this during the personal notes. This is just remarkable. Eric was this incredibly good-looking kid, grew into this man that I'd never saw a woman who didn't find Eric attractive. He just had that look. He was so gentle and so good to women. Never used his looks as a weapon. He was married in high school, and he stayed married until his wife died, Cindy. And then he died of Lou Gehrig's disease so young. But I remember going out and staying in his grandfather's farm in the bunkhouse. And they used to have hired hands. The farm had gotten smaller and smaller and smaller. But I'll tell you something, 4 o'clock in the morning is early for teenage boys. But dang it, the breakfast was good. So was the second breakfast and the first lunch. I didn't know sore. I was ninth grader. I didn't know sore. Until I tried to keep up with that old man who was probably something like my age, who could legitimately toss alfalfa bales while Eric and I had to lift them up together. During the personal note today, I'll tell you about going to church in that small town. Eric walked in with his long hair and a Kiss t-shirt. Remember the band Kiss? I'll tell you what happened with the pastor and how Eric got a swift right hand from Grandpa and then a beautiful blessing from the pastor. Beautiful blessing. I'm Todd Herman. This is The Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman. Welcome back to A Disciple's View. I didn't get to meet this gentleman when I was in Mississippi, and it was my loss. M.D. Perkins joins us. He's the director of Culture Warrior Film about Brother Don. And being, we stand on the shoulders of this giant that God empowered to be the first culture warrior. M.D.'s also a research fellow with the American Family Association and a producer of some other very successful films. He joins us now on A Disciple's View. M.D., man, I'm bummed out I didn't get to hang out with you when I was in Mississippi. Hi.
Well, it's good to meet you virtually here, Todd.
Appreciate that very much. MD also was the produced The God Who Speaks and His Image, Delighting in God's Plan for Gender and Sexuality. Let me ask you a question about Brother Don. I never got to meet him. Yeah. The stories I've heard about him, I know it was my loss to not meet him. Did he think of himself as a warrior?
That's a good question. I think he did. I think there is an element of fight and battle that was certainly in him. But at the same time, I mean, he talked to his family, you know, he was very congenial, he was very hospitable, he loved children, he was gentle. So there were kind of two sides to Don. There was that public face that was very much the battle-worn warrior in the culture, speaking out against these issues boldly. But as a pastor, as a father, as a husband, as a grandfather, he was very warm, very gentle, very easy to approach, loved playing with his children, loved going on vacations with the kids, loved being at the beach and things like that. So, yeah, it's kind of both sides.
You know, there's that phrase that we stand on the shoulder of giants, and certainly that's true. I have the great privilege of hosting a program on these 180 stations, and Don wrote about this in the book, I Had a Vision, God Had a Plan. It's a memoir. And whose shoulders did he stand on? Was he truly the first culture warrior in your mind?
Well, of that era, I think he's foundational. I mean, there were others out there, like James Dobson was starting to emerge around this time. Jerry Falwell was speaking out about a lot of issues. D. James Kennedy, Francis Schaeffer, if you want to think of kind of the worldview background behind some of this stuff, Norman Geisler. I mean, so there were others, but they were all interestingly kind of all emerging around the same time. So it's hard to say kind of who was first, but they were all kind of cut from a similar cloth and all built, you know, longstanding ministries and had a long-term impact on a lot of things going forward. So I kind of look at a group more than just a single person. But of course, you know, so we focus on aspects of both of that with the documentary. We talk about kind of the bigger issues of Christians getting involved in political and social concerns in the 70s and 80s. But and we focus that through Don, but you know, it is bigger than just him.
Of course, yes. I mean, it's a spiritual battle. It's the biggest of all battles.
Yeah.
So in the movie Culture War, which I've seen and really appreciate, I watched it with my wife.
Yeah.
Here's something that came away from me is Brother Don did this at a time where there was really a cost to be paid. He was made a cartoon, a caricature. He was attacked as this, and you'll forgive me. By the way, you should know, MD, I took a genetic test and I'm 79.7% redneck, so I get to use these
okay.
words.
Okay.
Right. He was this bumpkin and he was from Mississippi, and who from Mississippi knows anything? Nothing good's ever come from Nazareth or Tupelo, Mississippi, aside from Elvis.
Yeah.
But he was not daunted by any of that. And I'm watching this film and I'm thinking, I was putting myself in the boards of Hollywood, the board meetings. You know, I used to work there when I was with Microsoft, and thinking of them laughing. Oh, there's this guy, Wildman, and he's starting this organization, and oh, he's a bumpkin. And when do you think the media went, they sat back and went, oh hold it, wait a second.
Yeah.
Wait a second. This guy has juice. When did they figure that out?
Well, there's definitely a turning point. And I think one of the major turning points was probably in 1981, actually, if I can put a date on it, because that's the year that Don sat down and had a debate with one of the heads of CBS, the vice president of CBS, Gene Mader. And we document this section of within the documentary. And I think at that point, there was a recognition that, you couldn't just destroy this guy because his arguments are too based in logic and make too much sense to people.
Yep.
And so there was, you know, like you said, I mean, there was a treating of him with as kind of a novelty, as an interesting, you know, person to kind of poke fun at. But when that happened, there was a realization that what he's saying makes too much sense to common people. And it really highlighted just how out of touch a lot of these executives were with the common man. And so I think it really was June 18th, 1981, honestly, if I can put a very fine date on it. That's where there was kind of a script flipped, and there was a recognition that Don meant business.
Did they ever try to buy him off?
Yes. Well, advertisers did. So there's a story that we talk about. It's in the DVD as an extra feature. It's not in the movie itself. But if you go to culturewarrior.movie, you can watch the movie for free. But you can also, if you want to give a donation, you can sign up for the Culture Warrior kit. And there will be a DVD in there with special features. One of the DVD's special features deals with something called the Clear TV, which was a coalition group he made to kind of deal with advertisers and stuff. And they had launched a campaign against Burger King. And the Burger King, the boycott was so successful that Burger King was willing to meet with Don and the other Clear TV people and say, can we just make a $7 million contribution and get you to stop this boycott?
Wow.
And of course, Don turned it down and said, this isn't about making a contribution. We want you to change your policy of advertising on these raunchy shows. And they did. And Burger King actually put out a public statement in the New York Times and all these other newspapers saying that they were supportive of American family values. And they didn't directly reference Don in the ad, but basically agreed with his point of view and were willing to change their advertising policy there for a stretch. So yeah, there were incidents like that where people behind the scenes tried to pay off Don to try and get him to ease up on the pressure.
Oh goodness. MD Perkins is with us. He's the producer of Culture Warrior, a film I've seen. I didn't get to see the DVD. I need to get that. And you know, attempting to buy him off. I was out in Mississippi when I arrived, and I saw the campus, and some of the folks were showing me where the campus used to be. And when you walk into that lobby of the American Family Association and you see the cross of Christ and you see a prayer booth, and I'm told that there's devotionals each morning, and it doesn't matter where you are in the staff, you know, in a support position, an executive position, you get this chance to lead a devotional, and you realize you're standing in a house that God built. Mm-hmm. And did anyone who was confronted with Don, did that ever make a disciple of some of these lost people? You know, I have a formula I use when I am meeting with people who are in the idea world or the laptop class. There's a formula I use to try to get them to think about God and to become open to God. And that's borne some fruit. God's worked through me in that way a couple of times. Did it ever happen that people met Don and they expected him to be this angry, you know, terrible man, this so-called Bible thumper, and they came away going, wow, that he's a nice man, and maybe there's something to this whole Jesus thing?
Yeah, I don't know any direct stories of people who came to faith initially hostile to Don, but I know of numerous examples of people who were hostile to Don and then realized that he had been completely misrepresented in the media. One story I heard, which is also not in the documentary, so you're getting some behind the scenes, some additional stuff. So in the late 80s, early 90s, you know, Don had initiated a campaign against a lot of the convenience stores that were selling Playboy and Penthouse. Well, Playboy and Penthouse actually initiated a lawsuit against Don. And so there was this huge campaign by the pornographers to try and silence Don and get him to shut up. And apparently, Playboy paid for a private investigator to come down to Tupelo and to dig up some dirt on Don. They talked to a lot of AFA staff. They went all through like the church that Don was a part of and different parts of town to try and dig up some dirt on Don. And from what I was told, that this person left empty-handed and had to say that they couldn't put out the story against Don because he was a man of integrity. And his daughter told me that actually a year or so later, that investigator had called Don to personally apologize to him for the work that he had done on behalf of the pornographers to try and discredit Don, because he found that he actually truly was a man of integrity, a man of his word, and there was really nothing he could say against him. So, you know, that's the legacy of integrity. We don't always see the fruit of it immediately, but if we're bold, if we're consistent, if we're living according to our values and our stated beliefs, it can't help but have an impact on somebody, especially if they start to weigh us in the balance the way they were trying to do Brother Don.
Indeed, and we're told biblically, of course, to, you know, we want to act that way, be as far above reproach as we can.
That's right.
So that basically people have to make up allegations against us. Let me take 1 second here to do the duty of live radio and let the AFR audience know that Matt Gaetz has withdrawn from Kitson's oration to serve as Attorney General, says it's become a distraction. That's breaking news. That's just one of the duties of live radio. MD Perkins is with us, the producer of the film Culture Warrior. You know, MD, I met, I won't make this a long story because you're here to tell stories, not me, but I've related on the air that I interviewed a woman who had got drawn into the pornography industry. And she wanted to be a star, and she left her home when she was young. And it's the Hollywood story that's been repeated 10,000 times. If you've ever worked there, these things happen, and it happens with some regularity, that she started stripping, and then stripping became, will you make this, you know, short film? And then she was in pornography. And these women will so often drown themselves in drugs just to deal with the fact that they're just being defiled.
Yeah.
She was in Las Vegas at an event, uncomfortably enough, signing DVDs for men who wanted to watch her be defiled. And one man stepped out and her father was standing in front of her. Her own father. And he said, we miss you. We want you to come home. And this is my hotel room. This is a key. I'm going to stay. I hope you'll come and see me. So she took that. He stepped out of line. The next man stepped up. She considered this for a long time and finally thought, I will go. And MD, she knocked on the door. And he opened it. And he looked her in the eye and said, I am not ashamed of you. You were doing the best you could. I'm so glad to see you. I love you. Will you come in? And ultimately, he got her to leave that night. She agreed to go home, and she said, but I have some business to take care of. And he said, no, honey, you don't. He'd gotten on the phone with the family, her younger siblings, so overjoyed to hear from her. She went home that night. And she told me on the radio, she said, Todd, if my father had said anything else, but I am not ashamed of you, I would have walked away. So I want to ask you this. There's the culture warrior. There's confronting the culture. There is telling Hollywood to straighten their act out. But what I experienced from the Wildman family was love and acceptance. And in this film, what comes across to me is a man who did this because, not because he was ashamed, but because he loves and loved. Did I get it right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's something that people don't really understand about, one, Christian's involvement in the culture and speaking out, is that it is a love for our neighbors, which is why we're doing this, why we speak out about these things, because, you know, the pornography industry is destructive to individuals and to society as a whole, to men, women, and children. I mean, it's harmful. That's why Don spoke out about it. And one of the things that we share in the documentary, which makes it, you know, somewhat hard to watch, and why we actually had to put a warning at the front of the movie, you know, so please go watch it. But, you know, be warned that this isn't for all the little children in the home. I mean, because one of the stories that's in there is Don recounting the horrific impact of pornography within a particular family. And some of these stories that don't get shared in the news media outlets, especially at the time. And, you know, because he did care about children, he cared about women, he cared about men being in the home and not destroying their family through these harmful practices and things. And so when we're talking about the culture war, yes, we're speaking out with boldness, but there's also the heart as a Christian, as a believer, where you want to show the love of Christ and the compassionate embrace to those who are hurting, who are struggling. And that's what Don was always trying to get across. You know, I mean, there was the human toll to the culture war. And he didn't see it as like, we're fighting just kind of for our own namesake. It was, we were really fighting for these other people who were voiceless in the midst of all of this.
Yeah. And I you know, I'm probably annoy people a bit on the show because I'm really feel God has placed on my heart this burden to communicate to Christian men that we need to communicate to the world how Satan is able to use sex on us too.
Yeah.
Because I think when we don't do that, we create this circumstance where same-sex attracted people or gender-confused people, Satan can say to them, oh, look at the hypocrites. They won't even admit it. And you know that they have these struggles. And Satan is able to wrap people up in this confusion. And this is one of the things that I took away from the movie. Don was not confused. God gave him an incredible sense of clarity. And I would ask you, I would close with this question, and I want to make sure that we again repeat where people can go watch the film and get the DVD. Did Brother Don ever feel that this was a burden?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was definitely a burden for him. It was something that he always wanted to be relieved of because he felt like it was something that God placed on him. But because of that, he knew that he had to keep going and doing it because it was something that God gave. So, you know, that helped motivate him to keep going even when he didn't want to keep doing it.
Culture Warrior, it's the new movie. It's culturewarrior.movie. MD Perkins has been with us, producer. I'd like to have you back, MD. God bless you. Thank you.
Well, thank you. And please go to culturewarrior.movie to watch the movie for free today.
I second that. We'll come back with the Tower Babel. Welcome back to Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman. Man, what a cool discussion with MD Perkins. The movie's Culture Warrior, culturewarrior.movie, and see a man who decided to take on culture despite the fact that it was a burden he wanted the Lord to lift from him. And did it joyfully, and he did it so well. And this radio station, or this radio network stands as a testimony to what Don allowed God to build through him. It's culturewarrior.movie. So Matt Gaetz has decided to withdraw from consideration to be Attorney General of the United States. And he issued a statement saying it had become a distraction. He remained fully committed to seeing Donald J. Trump's the most successful president in history. He said, while the momentum is strong, it's clear my confirmation was unfairly becoming a distraction to the critical work of the Trump-Vance transition team. There's no time to waste in a needlessly protracted Washington scuffle. Thus, I'll be withdrawing my name from consideration to serve as Attorney General. Trump's DOJ must be in place and ready on day one. And this has been about this investigation into Gaetz supposedly paying to have sex with the children. And please don't say underage women. It's the phrase is children. If Gaetz did this, and so far to me, the DOJ's investigation of him, he was effectively cleared from this. And if they wanted to take him out, they would. If they could, they would, I should say. They do want to. The DOJ under Merrick Garland is utterly politicized. But Gaetz withdrawing is going to add to the discussion, only the guilty withdrawal. And I hope that President Trump's team has the next up. Some people had said it would be Kevin McCarthy. I pray it's not Kevin McCarthy. The DOJ under President Trump must, with God's wisdom guiding them, must walk an incredibly careful line. There are state-level officials who, to this moment, as I speak, are attempting to steal a senatorial election. They're doing it in public by refusing to stop counting illegal votes. They're doing it in public. They must face prosecution. In terms of the weaponizing of the DOJ against President Trump, which is flatly obvious, that must be prosecuted. It has to be dispassionately and fairly. Not as revenge or President Trump at one point said he is our redemption. And with all due respect to President Trump, no, you're not. No, you have no ability to redeem us. There's only one who redeems. That's the Lord Jesus Christ is the only one who redeems. His blood, period. Nor do I want you to be a revenge. I want to see the people who use that system to attack President Trump absolutely prosecuted when they can be, and many of them can be. So the person who comes next must be, in fact, probably more steadfast than Gates. The Republicans are going to fight, not the Republicans, but the school of Republicans led by the people who run Mitch McConnell and Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski, the people who want to pretend that everything is good in Washington, D.C., that there's no real corruption, that we're not spying on Americans, that we're not forcing Americans to get closer and closer and closer to a nuclear confrontation with Russia, which in fact the figureheads people have done. They are absolutely all in, pot committed, to use a poker phrase, to pretending it's all well, when they, in fact, have become rich on it not being well. Our system is set up that way these days. So Gates is stepping down. That's one bit of breaking news. Then there is this, and this is a comparison. Gates is accused of paying to have sex with underage women. With girls. Girls, that's what that is. If he did that, of course, he should go to prison. And of course he shouldn't be attorney general. I will now prove that Democrats don't care about women being assaulted. I shouldn't say Democrats, but the Democrats in Congress don't. A Democrat from Congress, Montana State Representative Zoe Zephyr, said this. Transgender women are every bit as biologically female as cis women, bisexual trans state lawmaker claims. So a trans state lawmaker, meaning a man pretending to be a woman, says that a man pretending to be a woman is every bit as biologically female as women. And for a large part, the Democrat Party agrees. This Democrat Party that's deeply concerned that Matt Gaetz may have paid to have sex with girls, they're so deeply concerned that they've inserted boys into girls' locker rooms, which has resulted in rapes. They're not concerned about Matt Gaetz's sexual habits. They're not concerned about girls being raped. They're concerned with the Almighty. No, no, not God. That's secondary to them. Power. They want that power. I hope that they'll reflect upon the fact that, like me and you, they will face judgment. And I don't want to see this. Well, let me be honest. I would kind of like to watch it, but I know that I will face my judgment too. I would kind of like to see the Lord Jesus say to the people who are doing this with the lies of transgenderism, to gain political power, I'd kind of like to see the Lord on Judgment Day say to these people, hey, you remember all that power you had on earth and that sweet pension you had where you got paid to not work for 30 years? Remember that? And to see the people say, yes, Lord, I remember. Okay, you've had your reward. That was your reward. Depart from me. It feels vengeful. I shouldn't think that way. To who extends mercy, mercy shall be granted. Let's shift gears and get into the Tower Babbling. On this program, we thank the Lord for placing supposedly wise people on tall towers of shaking sand with our feature called The Tower Babbling.
You know about the biblical truth of the Tower of Babel. A Disciple's View presents The Tower of Babbling.
And got my lipstick on today, so I'm a little bit more together. I cannot live in a country that voted for Trump. I cannot spend another 4 years under that man.
In the Tower of Babbling, it's three sound bites, and it's almost always three sound bites. In this case, it is exactly that. On The View, Sonny Hostin was forced to try to fend off a lawsuit by reading a legal note about Matt Gaetz.
How could you nominate someone with allegations of child trafficking across state lines and having sex with a 17-year-old?
You have a legal note.
I do have a legal note. Thank you, Whoopi. Matt Gaetz has long denied all allegations, calling the claims, quote, invented, and saying in a statement to ABC News that this false smear following a 3-year criminal investigation should be viewed with great skepticism, that DOJ investigation was closed with no charges being brought.
Adam Schiff, without proof, because the investigation is ongoing, effectively slandered Matt Gaetz as a child sex trafficker. He is not doing the business of the Senate, and Gaetz should probably sue him and probably win.
You heard what Speaker Johnson said about Matt Gaetz. What do you think?
I think he's not only unqualified, he is really disqualified. Are we really going to have an attorney general who there's credible allegations he was involved in child sex trafficking, potential illicit drug use, obstruction of investigation, who has no experience serving in the Justice Department, only being investigated by it?
Yes, of course, Adam Schiff is deeply concerned about all those things. That's exactly what the policies he backs shows. Whoa, wait, stop, reverse that. Last soundbite in today's Tower Babbling. This is from the so-called Transgender Day of Remembrance. It is a so-called pastor in a so-called church. And this sure sounds to me like a demonic prayer.
We call to the transcestors whose gender was celebrated, who are honored by your communities and given sacred roles as priestesses, shamans, and leaders. We call also to the transcestors who were shunned and silenced, who know how to survive harsher times than these. We call on the transcestors who fought for liberation and justice to bring us closer to the time when all can live their truth without fear. Bright, radiant ancestors, draw close to us now. Draw close because soon we'll be speaking the names of those who are newly dead, and they may need your help. So we call on you, bright ones, to gather them up, in your love and help them to find their way. Mm. Let our love make a bridge for the dead to cross over, the love of the living for those we've lost, and the unconditional love of the ancestors for all their trans descendants. Gather them up. Gather them up in your love and guide their journey.
Wow. Wow. Leviticus chapter 19, verse 31. Do not turn to mediums or necromancers. Do not seek them out, and so make yourselves unclean by them. I am the Lord your God. Deuteronomy chapter 18, verse 11. Or a charmer, or a medium, or a necromancer, or one who inquires of the dead. 1 Timothy chapter 2, verse 5, for there is one God, and there's one mediator between God and men, the man, Jesus Christ. No matter how corrupt one believes the leftist church is, it's not enough belief. It is that far corrupt. And that's a wrap for today's Tower Babbling.
That was the Tower of Babbling.
I don't have anything to share with all of you at this time, and I'll just leave it there.
On a Disciple's View.
On a personal note today, I can't emphasize enough how my friend Eric, who I met in sixth grade, could have used his personal magnetism and his looks as a weapon to give himself all sorts of, well, fleshly pleasures with women. He never did that. He told me when I saw him just before he died. He died very young of Lou Gehrig's disease, and I had the blessing of going to see him at his mother's home where he'd been staying. His wife, Cindy, had died. They married in high school. And Eric told me, you know what? I saved myself for marriage. He could have used that physicality, those looks as this weapon, and he refused because he was a loving soul. Easily hurt. He and I were out lifting hay bales while his grandpa tossed them onto the truck, under the trailer. Eric and I lifted them up together. We'd been sleeping in the bunkhouse, having the famous farm foods that his grandma cooked to perfection. Homemade German sausage straight off the farm. So good. hash browns piled high. That was first breakfast, and second breakfast was pancakes, and first lunch and snack. And we all had to have that because of the amount of work we do in these 12 and 14 hour days. On Sunday, Grandpa announced we were going to church. I had never been to church. My mother was a cafeteria Catholic, picking and choosing the doctrine she liked and tossing out that which she didn't. I'd been to funerals and I'd been to memorial services. But that's what church was for. I don't think I'd ever been to midnight mass at that point. So I walked into a church that reminded me of the Little House on the Prairie in this little small town outside of Spokane, Washington. It was just like that, a little tiny church house. Went in and sat down in the pews next to Grandma and Grandpa. And Eric sat right on the aisle, right next to Grandpa, to Grandpa's right. I was to Grandpa's left and then Grandma. They separated us two boys so we didn't clown. The preacher was preaching. I don't remember from what book of the Bible. I know he was in the Bible. It's the first time I've ever heard the Bible preached. And the preacher came up to Eric, who had this long hair. He was in sixth grade at this point, hadn't developed into the masculine good looks he gained later, but still very cute. Cute being operative. Wearing a Kiss t-shirt. His grandpa didn't make him change it. Never did figure that one out. And the preacher said to Eric, "What do you think, young lady?" Young lady. Eric spoke two words one doesn't speak to an adult. Blank. And then the word you. I'm a boy. Grandpa swiftly slapped him in the beak. Not hard, not to draw blood, but enough to say, "You shut up." The pastor did something different. He stepped back and said, "Oh my goodness, you're right. Look at me with my old eyes." And he took out glasses and he put them on. "I apologize. I didn't look carefully. I'm near blind. Would you forgive me?" Well, Eric forgave him. Later they laughed. And then the pastor took Grandpa aside and said, "No need to hit." Beautiful. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Because we believe, we speak. Because he first loved us, we speak his word. We walk in the path of Jesus Christ to make disciples of all nations until God gives us permission to speak again together. May his peace, which transcends all understanding, wash over you and your families. On behalf of Randy and AFR, I'm Todd Herman, and this has been A Disciple's View.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.